Many thanks to the organizers for kindly inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here. I wasn't really sure who is the audience of this talk, so I prepared two parts. One, this one, rather elementary stuff, so it might be boring for some of you, especially for the senior people. And tomorrow, more advanced things. Okay. Anyhow, repetitions are always useful, and there are different perspectives on one and the same thing, so I hope that will be not a total loss of time. Well, here's the outline of the talk. After a short introduction, I will present some very basic things, which most of you are familiar with that very much. Point processes, tessellations, and some calculus for these mathematical objects, which are basic, in my feeling, in order to stochastically model spatial networks. And at the end of my talk, I will give some outlook for tomorrow. Okay, let's start with the introduction. Aim of stochastic modeling is, one aim of stochastic modeling in general is to come up with hopefully simple models which can be described by a small number of parameters, but anyway describe geometrically complex structures like networks on various scales sufficiently precise. And are such that they can be easily simulated, or at least some features of them can be easily simulated, and to mimic present and maybe future network designs. In order to control, for example, service quality, or to play with the with the model parameters, to see what happens on the computer, like a pilot study, and then to go to people who really implement physically networks, and to say, tell them, hey guys, we found that and that on the computer, try to realize it. Cost analysis, risk evaluation is other purposes for stochastic modeling of real networks. So, as I said already, the two basic components are point processes and tessellations. Point processes are usually used for modeling locations of network equipment. And other features of networks can be described by random tessellations like communication paths or serving zones, communication paths by the edges of tessellations, or the cells of tessellations can have an inner life. So this will be the topic I will discuss tomorrow. In that sense, so if you have a macroscopic tessellation, for example, describing radio cells, so we also can have an inner life of these macroscopic cells, and then we live on at least two different length scales. Okay, so let's start with point processes. This is repetition. From the mathematical point of view, one looks at random variables on a, with values in some maybe non-usual state space. So we look at locally finite counting measures and equip this set with a sigma algebra in order to be able to define measurability. Examples are easily can be easily found. So a finite set of points, and we take these points as atoms of this kind of counting measure. Or otherwise, we can live on a grid, regular. Sometimes people, usually we will discuss models where the points live in the continuous space, Euclidean space in this case, so we can focus on R2, but dimension is not really necessary, at least from the conceptual point of view. With respect to implementation, it is, of course, important whether we are in R2 or in R1000. But we can live on a grid, for example, if you like. In some situations, data are given on regular grids. And also here we can define delta, Kronecker deltas to count these grid points being in a test set B. Okay, this is the counting measure approach to point processes, but simultaneously we can also directly model the atoms by sequences of random vectors, in that case two-dimensional random vectors, and the basic requirement is that these sequences are locally finite in this sense. This is very important for being able to do mathematics in the right way. And then we just define a random point process or point process as a random variable with this somehow strange state space in the usual way, as you learn it in the first courses, in the first probability courses. So we identify the random counting measure with the sequence of random atoms. So this is a basic philosophy. So we have two approaches. We have the counting approach and we have the atomistic approach, so to say. A very basic characteristic is the expectation measure of this random counting measure, called intensity measure, and a basic feature is shift invariance of the distribution of a point process called stationarity, and in this case we know that intensity measure is proportional to the Lebesgue measure, and in this case we can do Palm calculus. This is an important issue. Formally, the Palm distribution corresponding to a stationary point process is divided by such a ratio of two expectations. On the one hand, we count the number of points in a set of unit volume, which have some properties. So from the perspective of these points, the event A happens. And we divide this by the expected number of all points in this set of unit volume. So this is, at the first glance, a formal definition, which is not really intuitive, but there are different other approaches to the notion of a Palm distribution, which are more intuitive, but the computations are less convenient. So for example, one can represent this ratio of expectations as a limit of conditional distributions under the condition that we have at least one point in an infinitesimally small neighborhood of a given point, say, of the origin. Or we have also an ergodic representation of this notion. I will not go too deep into these details. And X itself has a distribution on this state space N, script N. This is also a distribution on the same state space, and we can consider a random variable with this distribution, and we call this the Palm version of X in the following. So examples you know very well. The most simple example is the stationary Poisson process. I will not go here, skip this. The next, the Poisson process is very popular in your community, but it's not really a realistic model. In the best case, it's a good, useful reference model. Step would be to look at general, not necessarily stationary Poisson processes with general intensity measures, not necessarily proportional to the Lebesgue measure. Besides, the definition is the same, as you know, and realizations might look in that way. Okay, but this was already discussed in several other talks. We would like to have interactions between points, which is not the case in the Poisson model. So we would like to have, for example, we would like to have attractions, so points would form clusters or repulsion. And there are many different point process models which realize these effects. Some of them were discussed in former talks during this conference. Here are some very simple examples. The most simple cluster process, Poisson type cluster process, is the Matan cluster process, where we have a homogeneous Poisson process of cluster centers, and around these cluster centers we locate again Poisson processes in some bounded areas, say in a disk of some given radius, and then we take the superposition of all these Poisson processes, and we get realization looks like this. So we have attraction of points, and this is a model with just three parameters, so not really too much. But this is already quite flexible. So turning with these parameters, we can achieve different nice effects. On the other hand, repulsion can be by Gibbs, various kinds of Gibbs processes, but a much more simpler scenario is, for example, the Matan-Hartkopf process, where you just cancel all those points who have nearest neighbors within a so-called hardcore radius, and this leads to a realizations are point patterns which are much more regular than in the Poisson case, and this means the points show a mutual repulsion, and this is also a very simple model, can be fully described by these two parameters. Lambda, the Poisson from which we start, and the hardcore radius. Okay, just to recall this. This talk we will focus on another class of Poisson type point processes called Cox processes. Some people in earlier years called them doubly stochastic Poisson processes. And to define this notion, we have to generalize a little bit this random variable approach to random counting measures. So we generalize the state space a bit. We still look at locally finite measures defined on the Borel sigma algebra of our state space, but we do not longer require that they are integer valued. So this extended set of states we call M, and in the same way we can define a sigma algebra of subsets of this M, and then again, as before, we can define a random measure, in particular a random counting measure, as a measurable mapping from a certain probability space to this extended state space. And the point process is called a Cox process if its finite dimensional distributions are given in this way. So for pairwise disjoint test sets P1 to Bn, the finite dimensional probabilities or distributions should be given in that way. And from Komogorov's fundamental theorem for stochastic processes, we know that these probabilities describe the object, the whole the global distribution of the point process in a unique way. So it's sufficient to define to say how these probabilities are organized. And in the case of the Cox process, they are given in that way, using a certain random measure, capital lambda, and the expectation of this product. So from this defining formula, we can immediately conclude that a Cox process is a conditional Poisson process. So given a realization of the random driving measure lambda, this Cox process is a conditional Poisson process with intensity, not necessarily homogeneous intensity measure mu. So this is an easy definition. Another thing which is useful in network modeling is to associate marks or labels to the points of various kinds of point processes. And the set where these labels take their values can be quite general. So yesterday, or I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, we spoke about Polish spaces, which were not really Polish spaces. In this case, it's a Polish space. The set of marks is a Polish space with the Borel sigma algebra of generated by open sets. And simple examples are real-valued labels, but we will consider set-valued labels for some reasons, which will become clear in a second. So suppose, or an important example in the context of network modeling is the case that the labels take values in the family of all not necessarily convex. So we will later on cancel this, but say at the beginning convex and compact polytopes. Centered at the origin. And here we can also introduce a sigma algebra, so-called hitting sigma algebra, which is also a classical thing. Okay, so having this, having a measurable mark space, we can extend, we return now to the case of counting measures, but we can extend the state space a little bit. So looking at the Cartesian product of the location space and the mark space. And again, requiring that with respect to locations, we have locally finiteness of these counting measures. And then we can extend also this script N in this way, and we have the same kind of notion as before, looking at now at two sequences of random vectors in general, or random sets. These would be random sets if M is the family of all convex and compact polytopes. And again, supposing that the axes are locally finite, we can define in the same way as before, a measurable mapping. So a market point process is just a random variable with this state space. And again, we can look at it as a counting measure, the sum of the Kronecker deltas, or as a sequence of market points. So this is again these two kinds of perspectives. So again, the expectation measure is a fundamental but important characteristic of market point processes. Here are some elementary examples. Suppose that we have a stationary Poisson process, and we associate with each point. With each point, we associate its Voronoi cell. Then we can consider the market point process of Poisson points and its Voronoi cells shifted into the origin. And then we get well-known Poisson-Voronoi tessellation seen as a market point process. Of course, other marks are possible. We have no need to take the whole information, not necessarily to take the whole information to the label. We can just look at partial information about the Voronoi cells, like the volume or the length of its boundary or whatever. Okay, Palm calculus for market point processes. So again, stationarity is a very important case, so shift invariance of the distribution with respect to shifting the locations, marks are unchanged. In this case, one can easily show that the expectation measure factorizes into a thing which we already saw before, and a probability distribution on the mark space. And this probability distribution, the second factor here, is called the Palm-Mark distribution of the market, of the stationary market point process. And besides, we can also extend the notion of the Palm distribution to the market case, and it's defined in the same way. So again, a ratio of two expectations. Here we have the expected number of points per unit volume with some properties. No? We have two properties. From the perspective of the given point, event A should happen with respect to this sequence of market points, and besides we can still require that the mark of the considered point itself has a certain property, divided by the total number of points per unit, expected total number of points per unit volume. So it's the same kind of definition as in the unmarked case, and it's not intuitive, it's not really clear why one should consider such ratios, but again we have other representations of this quotient in terms of conditional probabilities or conditional distributions or limits of conditional distributions, more precisely, or in the ergodic case, an ergodic type representation. Okay. Besides, there is a connection, an easy connection between the, would say, global Palm distribution and the Palm-Mark distribution, which is given in that way, just to recall you. Okay, and in this context, we speak about the typical mark, so a random variable with values in the mark space is called a typical mark if it's distributed according to the Palm-Mark distribution. And okay, as I said, we can give a nicer but less practical representation of Palm distribution, say the Palm-Mark distribution, or the distribution of this typical mark as an ergodic limit of this type. Yeah, so the advantage is that we don't have expectations, it's just a ratio of two numbers, two random numbers before taking the limit. But the disadvantage is that we have to consider these two random numbers for unboundedly increasing test sets, which is a disadvantage, of course, with respect to practical usage of this instrument. Okay, examples. The most simple example is a case of independent marking. So if the marks are IID and independent of the locations, then this is the most simple situation. Then we can easily understand that the Palm-Mark distribution is the same as the distribution we started from, which is not really surprising, but one has to show this. And the typical marks, also the Palm-Mark distribution, is the same as this from which we start off. Okay, again, examples which are interesting in context of network modeling. Let's again return to the stationary Poisson case, and let's consider it's the Voronoi cells of these Poisson points as marks shifted into the origin. And this is, of course, a stationary. If you start from a stationary Poisson, then also this market point process is stationary, and we can ask about its Palm-Mark distribution, for example, or about the Palm version of this stationary market point process. And that's a very easy answer can be given, namely, It's sufficient to, as you know, probably most of you know, that it's sufficient to add one more point, say at the origin or somewhere else. And then to look at this extended, by this deterministic point, extended point pattern, and to draw the Voronoi diagram. And in this way, one can easily show, or in fact it's based on so-called Slivniak theorem, that then we get a Palm version of this marked point process. And we can ask about the typical mark, and it's also not difficult to see that the mark, the Voronoi cell corresponding to this additional point, is the typical mark of this Palm version of the Poisson-Voronoi tessellation, seen as a marked point process. Okay. So a short, very short excursus through point processes. Now tessellations. General idea, okay, again, starting from elementary things, tessellation is also a point process, but on a more general state space, so again we have this local finiteness, which is very basic in the definition or in the handling of this calcul. So the idea is to decompose the space, the state space where we are, in our case here are two, into non-overlapping closed sets with non-empty interiors, which we call later on cells, and which might model radio cells or any other cells of network of spatial networks. And the important feature is that we require local finiteness. So any bounded test set should be hit only by a finite number of cells. This is very important. And if this is the case, we can again consider a measurable mapping from a certain probability space into the space where the points are located and a mark space. And in this case, let's suppose that the mark space is the family of all closed subsets of the Euclidean plane equipped with this hitting sigma algebra. Okay, examples. One we already discussed, the most classical example is the Voronoi scheme, Voronoi diagram leading to a decomposition of the state space into convex cells. And there are several other examples which lead to decompositions into convex cells. But in data, we often observe phenomena, non-convex phenomena, so non-convex cells. And we are happy that there are also several models which tessellation models, random tessellation models, where cells can be non-convex. And it's of course a little bit more complicated, but if we like to model, if you would like to consider random tessellations with not necessarily convex cells, then there are several possibilities. Okay. Let me recall you, Poisson, Voronoi, or any Voronoi, so the generating point process, it can be arbitrary, and we can, for any point process, we can, almost any, to get finite or bounded cells, we need some assumptions. Anyhow, we can define this set and can call the marked point process Xn, Xin, Voronoi tessellation. And in the Poisson case, if X is a stationary Poisson process, it's easy to see that the cells are really compact or bounded sets with probability 1. Laguerre tessellation is a generalization, so instead of starting from a point process, we start from a marked point process with non-negative marks, and then we define cells in that way. Of course, the Voronoi diagram is a special case. So if all marks are equal, we arrive again at the Voronoi diagram. But for, say, random marks, we get much more general things. With the effect that the germs, so-called germs or generating points, not necessarily must be inside the cell, And it can also happen that a germ does not generate any cell. It's also possible. Anyhow, if XR is an independently marked stationary Poisson process, then the resulting sequence of centered cells is called Poisson-Laguerre tessellation. And here is an illustration. So we have a point process, and we draw its Voronoi diagram. And if we additionally equip the points with these radii, then we arrive at the Laguerre tessellation. Roughly speaking, the size of these radii are somehow co-monotone with the size of the resulting cells. So this large radius increases this Voronoi cell, as you see. On the other hand, if a circle is completely contained in another circle, then it can happen that this germ doesn't generate any cell, or at least it does. Its cell does not contain the germ. So this is some strange effects. Anyhow, Laguerre tessellations is a much more flexible tool, of course, than the Voronoi tessellation. Okay, other classical models, which lead to convex cells, decomposition of the state space into convex cells, are Delaunay triangulation, where the Poisson seed points of neighboring cells are connected by edges, as you certainly know. And this is a realization of a Delaunay tessellation. And another very elementary example is the case of a Poisson line distribution, or in higher dimensional spaces, hyperplane tessellation. So you start from a Poisson process on the real line and equip the Poisson points with uniformly distributed angles. And then you can consider lines generated by these marked points R n phi n, where the R's are the assigned distances from the origin, and the phi's are the orientation of these lines. And the sequence of these random lines is called the Poisson line process. And under some assumptions, we not necessarily need a uniform distribution here. It can be more general. The sequence of these lines produce decomposition of the state space into convex and compact cells, which is then called the Poisson line tessellation. Now, if in this case, which is shown here, that the orientations are uniformly distributed, this line tessellation is not only stationary but also isotropic. But isotropy is not really a necessary feature for Palm calculus. Okay. More general models which lead to non-convex cells are aggregate tessellations. So you superimpose two, say, Voronoi tessellations, and you take the union set, say two Poisson Voronoi tessellations, one with a high intensity and one with a small intensity, leading to much larger Voronoi cells, and then you consider the union of all those Voronoi cells of the Voronoi diagram which is generated by a highly intensive Poisson process which belong to a given cell of the small intensity Voronoi tessellation. And this leads clearly to cells which are non-convex in general. Other examples is a very popular model recently intensively discussed in literature is the following kind of generalized Laguerre tessellations. It's like Laguerre tessellation. So you have germs, it's a point process, not necessarily Poisson, any point process. Then you have these radii, and besides, you consider matrices which plays a role of a distance transformation somehow, and you associate with the germs cells in that way. So if the A's would be all A's would be the unit matrix, 2 times 2 unit matrix, then it's just a Euclidean norm and we would be back to the usual Laguerre tessellation. But if we look at random 2 times 2 positive definite matrices, we get somehow a distance transformation which makes things even more flexible. And this object is called a generalized Laguerre tessellation, specifies, of course, to Laguerre and also to Voronoi. And the same features can happen as before for ordinary Laguerre tessellations, that the germ can be outside of the cell and germ not necessarily must generate a cell, and in addition cells can be non-convex. Now, this is a fact which we oftenly observe in real data, that cells are non-convex. And here's an illustration. So besides the germs, we have these radii R, and we have these matrices which are here visualized in terms of ellipses. And they play the role of a direction dependent scale transformation. So you see, for example, here, this ellipse is more or less horizontally oriented. This means that this germ grows much faster horizontally than vertically, and here vice versa. And this causes that this germ dominates everything in this area here. and even more important, the cells can be non-convex, and the boundaries can be curved. Whereas in the former example of a superposition, the boundaries are piecewise linear, which is in the general, which must not be the case in the generalized Laguerre tessellations. A third example of tessellations with non-convex cells are so-called beta skeletons, which can be considered as a generalization of the Delaunay triangulation by deleting edges. So the story is you consider intersections of balls. So you consider two balls and take their intersection. And depending on beta, this intersection becomes larger. So with increasing beta, the intersection gets larger. And the idea is to put an edge between these two vertices, X and Y, if no further vertex is inside this intersection set. And for beta equal to 1, we get the Delaunay triangulation, and with increasing beta, we delete more and more edges. So this is visualized here. And by deleting edges, of course, we arrive at non-convex cells. And in communication networks, I suppose that the edge set models the communication paths. Of course, we want to have connectivity. And this is a non-trivial issue to show that by deleting edges, we don't lose complete connectivity. Of course, the Voronoi the Poisson Delaunay, okay, that's clear, I would say, or more or less clear. The Poisson Delaunay Poisson Delaunay graph is completely connected, but by deleting edges, in principle, it could happen that we get several clusters of edge sets, which is not the case for many practicable point processes like the stationary Poisson and also further classes of stationary point processes. Okay, So this is a short review through fundamental classes of point processes and tessellations, and now we want to use these tools more specifically to model networks. So the time is running, I have to speed up. So local simulation of typical, we already know now what is the typical cell of a stationary tessellation. It's connected with the point distribution, and I showed you in the ergodic case, and most point processes are ergodic, and this limit representation for unboundedly increasing test sets holds. But this is unfeasible from the practical point of view. We don't want to simulate point patterns in infinitely large sets, but we want to simulate things locally. In particular, the typical cell, you know, which is an important characteristic of stationary tessellations. So we know very well how to do this in the classical case for Poisson-Voronoi diagram. Slivniak theorems says we just have to add zero and then to simulate a Poisson. Radially, say, which leads to a suitable stopping rule. So here I go through this. It's clear how to simulate a Poisson, homogeneous Poisson radially, and in a rectangle, we can stop simulation when this condition is fulfilled. And in this way, we have an easy algorithm to generate the typical cell of a Poisson-Voronoi diagram, which is illustrated in that way here. So some when things stabilize, if we can easily determine this radius. And this can be done in a similar way for much more general, or slightly more more general tessellations. For example, tessellations induced by doubly stochastic Poisson processes, which I mentioned at the beginning of the talk. So let's consider the case that the Cox process, so the process of germs, has a leading or driving measure, capital lambda, which is concentrated on the edge set of a stationary tessellation. In this way here. And on the edge set, we suppose that we have, in the one-dimensional sense, homogeneity. So let's look at such kind of Cox processes. And it's easy to see if T is a stationary tessellation, then also the Cox process is a stationary point process, and we can compute its intensity. And again, given the edge set of the underlying tessellation, we have a conditional Poisson process with an intensity measure which is concentrated on a lower dimensional set. Now it's on a one-dimensional set in the two-dimensional state space. On the edges, we have stationary Poisson processes. So here are some examples. As the underlying tessellation, we can take any type of the tessellations I mentioned before. For example, Voronoi type tessellations, or Delaunay or line, and then generate the Poisson points on the edge. On the edges. So for example, if you think about a road system, urban or nationwide, and you think that some base stations of your network are located on these roads or close to these roads, then this might be one of these three cases, might be a suitable modeling approach. Okay, how we can, in this case, simulate typical cells, typical Cox-Voronoi cells. So we start from a more general approach for the generating point pattern, and suppose having these seed points, we look at a Voronoi diagram. And Interestingly enough, we can again use something like Slivniak's theorem now in a slightly more general fashion. namely, Slivniak's theorem for stationary Cox processes says that the Palm version of such a Cox process is again a Cox process, but now with a slightly different driving measure, linear again on the edge set of a certain tessellation, which is called here T tilde, and it can be interpreted as a conditional version of the original stationary tessellation, given that the origin belongs to the edge set. So we shift the original tessellation in a way that the origin becomes an element of the edge set. This is the interpretation, and in some cases one can nicely represent this conditional tessellation T tilde, which is nice representations in that way, which are suitable for local simulation. And this, roughly speaking, goes in the following way. Similarly, like in the Poisson case, we can again radially simulate, and but now we have to do it a little bit more carefully in an alternating fashion. So we have to simulate points and edges of this conditional edge set one t tilde one. And in because we can do it radially, we find a similar kind of stopping rule. And the theory behind this is the following. Palm version of this stationary Cox process is given in that way, where X tilde is a Cox process with leading measure given by the Palm version of the original leading measure. Also for Palm, for stationary measures, one can introduce, I didn't do this, but one can introduce the notion of Palm distribution and in a very similar way. So let's look at the special case that lambda is given in that way, as mentioned before. Then one can show that the distribution of this lambda zero, of the Palm version of lambda, is given in a quite simple way, like as it is shown here, and T tilde, which is the important thing, can be considered as a conditional version of T under this condition. And this leads to a nice local simulation algorithm for the typical cell of this kind of Cox-Voronoi diagrams, which is described in this theorem, which is a result of a paper of Günter Last and his PhD student already a couple of years ago. So what we first have to do, we have to simulate something which contains the origin. And roughly speaking, this is described by these three random variables. And then we can proceed as in the unconditional case. So this is roughly the story. I don't have the time to go too deep into details. So we simulate x1 and x2 and this angle phi, and then we can draw a segment or a line which goes through the origin. And this guarantees that the edge set, that the origin belongs to the edge set. And besides these two initial points, we generate further Poisson points on the edge set on the edge set of the unconditional tessellation. Given this this radius R is random. If we condition on this radius R, then we can simulate outside the circle with the origin as midpoint and radius R, can simulate a usual Poisson process. And then processing like in the Poisson-Voronoi case, with the only difference that we have to simulate alternatively edges, endpoints on the edges, and getting again a similar kind of stopping rule and a nice local simulation algorithm for this kind of Cox-Voronoi tessellation. If we wanted to consider more general tessellations on which the Poisson points are located, then we have another tool for local simulation of a typical Voronoi cell, Cox-Voronoi cell, which is given in this theorem, where we can represent this T tilde by a kind of mixture of weighted distribution, so to say, where T star is also a kind of palm version of T, but now with respect to the vertices. No? We don't want to take the palm version of T with respect to the vertices, but with respect to the edge set. But the palm distribution with respect to the edge set we can express in this way by the palm version of T with respect to the vertices. And in some cases, this representation is also useful for local simulation of typical cells. In particular, just to give one example, for Poisson-Delaunay tessellations, we can easily use this theorem, because then the vertex set is the Poisson process, and we know how to simulate the Poisson process. And also this edge star at the origin is not really difficult to simulate. So in this case, in the case of the typical Cox-Voronoi cell generator, in the case that the leading or the driving measure of the Cox process is generated by Poisson-Delaunay tessellation, we have also a nice local simulation algorithm, which is also based on Slivniak's theorem. Okay, let me skip this. What else? Maybe finally, briefly to mention the Poisson line case. If in the case that the underlying tessellation on which the Cox points are generated is a Poisson line tessellation, then it's relatively easy to simulate the typical Cox-Voronoi cell, because in this case T tilde can be easily represented like such a union set. So we take the original the edge set of the original stationary Poisson line process and just add a line through the origin with uniform, as in the isotropic case, which I mentioned before, but can be generalized, just add a line through the origin with a uniformly distributed orientation. And this is a nice, easily to simulate representation of T tilde, or respectively of the edge set of T tilde. And again, we have a nice local simulation algorithm for this Cox-Voronoi cell. Okay, so this is a very rough survey through elementary things, which most of you know. And just to finish, a brief outlook, if you like, to a second part, which might be presented tomorrow. Based on this kind of modeling elements, we can go one step further. We can, for example, we can throw base stations, so to say, located on road systems, using Cox processes whose driving measures are concentrated on the edge set of tessellations, and then we get the Cox-Voronoi tessellation. And what we can do with respect to a multi-scale modeling approach, we can fill in the cells of this Cox-Voronoi tessellation with inner structure. And this is what I would like to discuss tomorrow, if you like. We can do it in two different ways. At least we can insert random graphs into the cells, for example, into the Cox Voronoi cells and any others also, and then compute the distributions of characteristics inside the cells, like shortest path length, number of hops to the root of the graph, any other things. And we can insert full-dimensional random sets in the cells, and this is more. I think this would be more relevant in the wireless, in the case when we would like to model wireless networks. And these full sets inserted into the cells, generated by, say, base stations, could describe uncovered areas where we have bad service quality, or it can the sets themselves describe good areas, and the complementary not covered bad areas, and especially we can look at the uncovered sub area close to the boundary of the Cox Voronoi cells, and this could be a vehicle to describe situations where we have problematic handover between neighboring radio cells. So this is a two-scale modeling approach to spatial networks. And what we did in this framework was to develop something like a virtual testing tool, network testing tool, in the sense that we developed or we performed massive simulations and produced derived approximation formulas for various system characteristics, like shortest path lengths, or also the distribution distributions of features, several kinds of features, area, contents, or surface area, or curvature characteristics, or any other things, and overnight, so to say, or over the weekend, and then if we want to analyze real data, then we just have to go to this library and take. Or of course, we have to decide which type of model and fits the model parameters, and then we have a chance to find out good situations, good scenarios with which fulfill some performance requirements quite quickly without any simulations. And for a wide spectrum of tessellation models, all those which I mentioned are nicely implementable and can be locally, the typical cells and their inner life can be locally simulated, and for a wide spectrum of model parameters. So this is a general intention in this kind of projects where we work on in Ulm on various scales, by the way. And tomorrow I might tell you some, if you like, I might tell you some modeling approach about some modeling approaches which can be used not only on the geographic scale but also on microscopic scales. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this interesting introduction to the theory of random tessellations. Are there any questions? If not, we reserve that for tomorrow.
Okay.